At this time, I will welcome to the stage Dan Gibbons, our CEO, Andrea Kirsten, Chief Administrator of the Civilian Office of Police Accountability, and Anthony Driver, President of the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability. Anthony, did your parents make it in yet? Did your parents make it? Oh, okay.
Thank you, Jackie.
I'm Dan Gibbons. I'm the CEO of the City Club of Chicago. Appreciate everyone's time here today. We've had a number of conversations about today's conversation, and looking forward to sharing it with all of you. And we'll get into it. Obviously, today I think many people have seen some news that is going to help drive some of the conversation. That was of course not planned. Another unfortunate incident that we will get into in a minute. But what I'd like to do is start the conversation today by, of course, after welcoming all of you, asking you, Anthony, asking both of you actually to give us a bit of a 101 on your organization, how it came to be, and also how it kind of compares, because I'd like to assume that a lot of folks in this room may not know exactly how all these organizations are working in Chicago with regards to accountability and public safety, and bolstering community trust in public safety. So this is a big conversation. It may have to be continued, but I'd like to get started with just a quick 101. And Anthony, if you don't mind giving us a getting us started with your organization, and again, how you came into it and what your responsibility is, and then we'll move to Andrea.
Yeah, so the CCPSA, or the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability, is really the culmination of a 50-year struggle in the city of Chicago. The first calls for community control of the police department came after the assassination of Chairman Fred Hampton of the Black Panther, Chicago chapter of Black Panther Party. They held in 1973, they held a conference in the city of Chicago, before he was an alderman or a congressman. Bobby Rush was actually one of the lead organizers, where they started to have the conversations about what does it look like, how do we want our communities to be policed, and what does community control look like. Fast forward 50 years later, there were two competing ordinances. There were CPAC and GAPA. I won't get too in the weeds of that, but it was eventually became a coalition that was the ECPS coalition that passed in July of 2021 with a supermajority of the city council supporting it. So I sit at the head of the current interim commission, which is a 7-person body. We play a direct role in hiring and firing the COPA chief and hiring and firing the CPD superintendent. We set goals for the department. Also, we nominate police board members. We are the final say-so for all policy if it is not in the consent decree. We are mandated by city ordinance to have one meeting per month, and so far we've just got going, but we are one part of another body, which is the district councils, which every police district now has 3 elected members per district who are the eyes and ears of the community, and there's a direct flow of information that hasn't been perfect thus far, but it flows up from the community to the commission and back down and so forth.
Just a few months old, right?
We are, I think, in month 19.
Okay.
But who's counting?
And I know we do have Sarah Kammerer is here, at one of those commission members. I don't know if there are any other commission members.
Panchita Moore.
Oh, Panchita.
I don't know if I saw anybody else.
Thank you for your service. We're starting to learn about these roles, and being here in this conversation today is helping us in that. So thanks for that brief overview. We'll dig a little deeper on a lot of that as we move forward. Now let's talk about COPA. And I think there's a little more familiarity with COPA, given it's been in existence a number of years longer than the community commission. Andrea, you've been there now for 3 years, is it?
It's hard to say. I've been with COPA since 2016.
Okay.
I've served in my current capacity as chief administrator since February of 2022 was when I was confirmed.
Great.
And acting chief administrator prior to that.
So you've got some history there, and obviously with in the broader sense for even more years than that. Can you give us again COPA's role in the broader picture? We've heard about the community commission. We heard a little bit about the police board. For those of us who, again, aren't in the middle of all of this, paint the picture for us, please.
Sure. So we are a city agency, independent from the Chicago Police Department, independent from City Hall itself, and we are a completely civilianized organization that is responsible for conducting the misconduct allegations against Chicago police officers. And the nature of our investigative authority is administrative investigations. So that means whether officers followed correctly their training and policy in the execution of their duties. We have a pretty broad jurisdictional mandate. It includes any allegations of excessive force, any improper search or seizure allegations, so your Fourth Amendment allegations, domestic violence committed on or off duty, sexual misconduct, coercion, essentially using an officer using their authority to compel someone to do something they wouldn't do otherwise, unlawful interference with right to counsel, and something that garners a lot of public attention is we are tasked with investigating all police shootings, whether or not there's an allegation of misconduct. We do that as an agency of about 150 full-time employees. And in addition to our investigative work, we also have authority to make policy recommendations to the department. And obviously now with the advent of the commission, any recommendations that the department wanted to implement would be things that would have to be discussed with the commission. And we do so sort of from our perspective of receiving this large amount of complaints year over year and trying to identify what lessons can be learned from the misconduct allegations that come into our office. So that's a little bit about COPA, and we've been in existence since 2017, and our launch as an agency was really as a direct response to the police murder of Laquan McDonald. There had been prior civilian oversights, other agencies doing this similar work, but really a couple of things with the murder of Laquan McDonald. Number one was the lack of transparency surrounding the nature of his death. And so I didn't touch on this yet, but a big part of what makes COPA different than what was here before is our responsibility to make public videos and other supporting materials relating to all police shootings. So,
which I did have a couple other questions, but let's get into that, because it today, and some many of you may have heard, there was a release of a whole host of videos, right, and audio and documents from a number of days ago, and I don't want to get, I'll let you get into the facts if you don't mind, because I'm not certain of all of them, but this was a police shooting of Dexter Reed on the west side, if I'm correct. Could you get into that a bit today? Again, we didn't plan for this to happen today, but I watched some of the videos. I started to understand a broader picture of the story. It's a pretty intense situation. Could you delve into it a little bit here?
Yes. So essentially the facts as we know them now in our preliminary stages of an investigation are that the 11th District, there's a tactical unit assigned to the 11th District. Tactical officers are plainclothed. Five of them were in an unmarked Chicago police car conducting traffic stops on March 21st of 2024 in the approximate area of like Ferdinand and Hamlin Avers area when they encountered Dexter Reed's car. He was the sole occupant of a vehicle that was traveling westbound on West Ferdinand at about the 3800 block. The information we have thus far is that officers curbed his vehicle for not wearing a seatbelt. And in the commission of that traffic stop, multiple officers came out. And as I stated earlier, and is now in the public sphere, while giving verbal commands to Dexter Reed, which he did not immediately follow, things escalated. And ultimately, there was an exchange of gunfire resulting in Mr. Reed's death, an officer being shot and wounded. And a prolific amount of video evidence because all five of the officers were wearing body-worn cameras, and there's some pod footage and some third-party video from homes in the community. There was a large amount of rounds fired, and so this was a pretty significant moment, and I think that's again just going back to transparency, why it's important for these videos to be released. Certainly the investigation has to unfold as to whether or not any policies or training were violated, and certainly criminal review of any possible criminal liability that may come out of this. All that has to take place, but getting into the hands of the public so that we can sort of level set an understanding of what occurred, that's what happened today with the release of these videos under our city's video release policy.
And that you said that happened this March?
Yes.
So that's
19 days ago.
19 days ago. That's a little different from how things have been previously, right?
It's an improvement on a policy that here in Chicago, we have up to 60 days to release all of these videos. That's what the policy requires. We try in many instances to release sooner than that. And thankfully, we've been able to establish a video release and transparency unit to have dedicated staff that work solely on those issues. In fact, our director of that unit is here. And so having the staff to be able to work through this voluminous amount of materials helps us to be able to release things to the public more quickly than that 60-day deadline.
Great. And is that because you've had, with all of this, has your budget increased? Is that something that the consent decree maybe has helped with?
Well, our ordinance actually established that our budget is 1% of CPD's overall operating budget.
Oh,
so okay. As CPD's budget increases, so does COPA's budget, which is a valuable thing. And I think that's an important part of sort of making sure that we have independence and the ability to function with the resources that we need.
And Anthony, how about your budget? Is that's
yeah.
a relatively new?
It's similar. It's tied to the floor of the CPD budget, which I really don't like, because essentially, if we're doing our jobs well and doing excellent work, we shouldn't be incentivized to want the CPD budget to increase so that our agency can get more money. So I'd rather tie it to the general fund than to the CPD budget.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that for COPA's budget, but I'm saying for
sure.
me personally, it's an incentive, and it needs to be fixed in the ordinance that so we shouldn't. If CPD's budget increases, so does mine, and that's problematic.
I wonder how the superintendent feels about that.
I think the Inspector General's office is actually an office that's funded with the floor being the general fund, meaning as the city of Chicago's budget increases theirs, and I think that's a good balance.
Okay.
But the department that I oversee shouldn't be influencing how much money our department gets. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know how the superintendent feels about it, but I think that was a mistake that we made when drafting the ordinance.
Okay. Were you involved with drafting the ordinance?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I was involved with the fight for civilian oversight prior to my role as a political coordinator, city and county political coordinator at SEIU Healthcare, and my union's here with me today. But it was really our union that, after engaging our members and seeing that over 80% of them supported community control of the police, that we were really able to put the full weight and force of our union behind that. And to our president, Greg Kelly's credit, he gave me the freedom as political coordinator to engage in that struggle for community oversight. And so I was the lead strategist and lobbyist. Our executive director, Adam Grossnow, was our lawyer for the coalition. And then once the ordinance passed, I was selected by the city council and Mayor Lightfoot, and then elected by my peers as the president.
Okay. And since then, you've already had a pretty significant decision to make, right, in selecting the next superintendent, selecting Superintendent Snelling, correct?
Yes. So we led a nationwide search, international search, actually, because there was applicants from abroad for the next superintendent, which is now Larry Snelling, who was confirmed with a 50-0 vote at the city council. But we've also done other significant things, such as abolish the gang database, create a new policy around extremism within the ranks of CPD. We've, of course, talked a lot about police arbitration and why we were against the lack of transparency. So we've released two budget reports. We've had officer wellness hearings. We've hit the ground running, and I'm pretty proud of the work so far.
I'm going to come back to something in a second. Speaking of the superintendent and the police department, I do want to ask you this too, so you can. But how's everybody's relationship with the police, with the department? Let's start maybe with the superintendent. You know, I know he's been in the police department, in Chicago's police department, importantly, for a number of years. I can't imagine everyone always sees eye to eye on everything. How is that working, and how's that relationship? And I'll ask both of you and start with you, Andrea.
With any oversight entity, I think there's always some push and pull between the entity being overseen and those weighing in. I can say this personally because COPA is also subject to oversight, both with the commission, the inspector general's office. Having your work reviewed externally is not always comfortable. So there's certainly opportunities, I think, to differently understand one another's perspectives. Having said that, I've worked with a number of superintendents at this point, and each one of them is a different and unique individual. But never have we had a circumstance where the Chicago Police Department is not providing the sort of information that we need to get our work done. The manner in which that information gets provided can always be improved on. That's where things can get negotiated. But at the end of the day, I think we're all committed to trying to make sure that we have what we need to do our job, and accordingly, so does the Chicago Police Department. And so that's sort of where I leave things with respect to my relationship with the superintendent and, frankly, any member of the Chicago Police Department.
Great. And can I ask the same of you, Anthony?
I would say our relationship is respectful. We are an oversight agency. When we went, he's been a man of his word to me. I will say that. One of the things that I was very concerned about during the search process was the regular days off that were canceled by officers. That was something that he did within the first week. But I also put that relationship to the test, that he made a number of promises to me. Like, he would say things like, you can pop up at any police station anytime you want and call me, and I'll tell them to let you in and see whatever you want to see. You need to see, that's not confidential. And I have randomly
Yes,
I wanted to know
what
one.
Do you see in those.
Well, I wanted to see how the SDSC rooms work. So, and also, strategic. Bob, help me out. Strategic decision support centers.
Yep.
I wanted to see how those work, but I also wanted to see the conditions. I'm a trade unionist at heart, and I had heard about these deplorable conditions, and I wanted to pop up and see for myself, and they were indeed deplorable, and see that people should never have to work in those environments, but also got a chance to sit in those technology rooms and observe randomly with officers who had no idea that I was going to show up that day, and a commander who, you know, sort of just had to deal with me popping up. But I do appreciate him staying true to his word and not hiding things.
So now, in just going down that path a little bit, has that resulted in some betterment of that process or those conditions, or what are you able to do once you do learn of the conditions? And
what it ended in is that we put it in our budget report and a recommendation to the city council. So I don't think there's been enough time yet since that last budget passed, but I do hope to follow up on that. I mean, you had officers who their locker rooms are molded, their feces and, you know, rodents throughout the building. They would have to lock their gear into their car because they could this. It was that disgusting in the police station. There's buckets everywhere catching rainwater. Sometimes it will flood up to 2 feet. And so you can imagine, you lock your gear in your car because you can't take it inside. And then somebody breaks in, and now you are in an extreme amount of trouble with probably COPA or BIA. But those were things that I observed that I thought...
I'm sitting in between them intentionally. In case
No beef here.
So, actually, that will lead me back to what I was going to mention a couple minutes ago with, you know, and looking at some of the video from today that was released, and knowing that Alexa and Nami is here. Can we talk about mental health? And one thing that I want to, because there are a number of ways we can approach it, and I do think that, and I'm committed here to City Club to having a conversation on mental health for first responders. It's something that we've talked about before and certainly want to talk about again. But there, and you talk about some of these conditions and what people have to, you know, what these officers have to go through, and I can imagine them seeing all the work that others are doing in an oversight capacity. And how does that affect what you're doing, and perhaps lean on some of the partnerships that you may have created or leaned on, you know, in these past 19 months?
Yeah, so I didn't expect in any way for that to be a priority for our commission. It wasn't on my radar. I approach this work from a community lens, but it challenged my value system. I'm a person who's fought for treatment, not trauma. I'm a person who believes that I go to therapy every Friday. I believe that everybody should have that access. And so for me to go into a police station and there's a Muslim officer who's in a quiet room praying, sandwiched between 2 to 3 tables under a file cabinet, it just seemed completely like our city was completely disrespecting this person and his religion, not to mention what they go through on a daily basis. So for me, it gave me a chance to have to open my eyes and be true to my values. If I want to fight for mental health, I can't exclude the Chicago Police Department. And so that's how this became a thing. That's why the regular days off cancellations became such a thing for our commission and for the superintendent, because what officers would say is, the mental health resources is great, but planned time on my family is better. The fact that I've worked 18 days and I haven't had a chance to, my marriage is on the rocks. I haven't had a chance to sit with my wife. I haven't had a chance to take my kids to school. I'm missing games. That was weighing on them a lot more than not actually having clinicians. And that was something our city wasn't even talking about. So it's become extremely important to me and a chance for me to live my values.
Great. And has that fit into what you've been doing at COPA?
I mean, obviously our role is different than that of the commission, but I think we see sort of the fallout from having lack of wellness at times in our police force. It's certainly something that I think COPA became initially aware of in the midst of the civil unrest after George Floyd's murder. One of the first times we ever weighed in on officer wellness was seeing officers being redeployed day after day without adequate sleep or rest in order to combat what was happening in our city as far as unrest. But I think for us, the role is different and our response is different. So a couple of things. First and foremost, we've recognized that our staff has to be well in order to interact with officers in a manner that's respectful and can do a job, but do it with a humanity and a level of empathy that I think is called for on both sides of this issue. And so one thing I'm really proud of is our partnership with NAMI Chicago to support our staff differently, to support the people whose lives we interact with, whether they're officers or civilians. And make sure
I imagine
that
the victims and the families of the victims are in some pretty in some need there, right?
Absolutely. And so taking the shooting of Dexter Reed Jr. this morning, anytime videos are released, a family has to come in and view those, or has the opportunity to, if they choose to, view those in relative privacy is not the right word, but before they mm-hmm. become public. Having NAMI Chicago be able to help extend resources to families and really encouraging other parts of the city, like the community safety coordination centers and others, to start resourcing these families differently is one way to help contributing towards wellness on that side. With respect to officers, all of our investigative staff go through trauma-informed interview training. And we started that process for victims and survivors of police misconduct, but quickly realized officers are experiencing traumatic incidents as well. And so making sure that whether we're sitting down across the table from someone who's gone through police misconduct as a complainant or a victim, or an officer who's lived through an officer-involved shooting, we want to have the same skill set to be able to provide that trauma-informed interview, regardless of who we're interviewing.
So how does that happen today, yesterday, this week, for instance? I mean, because I'm, as I said, I was watching some of this morning, and it's helpful just in the bigger context to look at an example of today. How the families come into your office?
Yes.
And police officers do the same? I mean, is that... How does this work? Can you walk us through a little bit deeper and the actual logistics of these processes?
Glad you asked, because we would love a bigger office to make sure there's room for everyone. We logistically have to make space to welcome families who have survived an incident like this. Like Dexter Reed's family yesterday came into our office to view this video and try to clear out a certain section of the office to make sure they're not interacting and can have that space and time to process what they're seeing. Likewise, we have to make available to officers the ability to meet with their attorneys and their representatives, their union reps, and have time to process what they are experiencing as well. So it is a challenge. And with respect to families, that work is really led by my first deputy, Ephraim Edie, who's also here today, and his communications and external affairs team, to try and engage subject matter experts to make sure that we are as prepared for that moment as possible. But there is no easy path forward, and it's often a very challenging aspect of our work.
Yeah, I can imagine. Thank you, and thanks to some of your folks here. If you could raise your hand, if you're a team member, we appreciate all of your efforts in these incredibly difficult scenarios. I'm going to head back to a couple of questions that we had before this week's events. The court ruling recently, and let me mention, if anyone has questions, I have a couple of questions. questions from audience members here that were pre-submitted. You're welcome to submit questions if you Amanda's over here and you can hand them up to me. But one thing that we wanted to get into in this turn, this actually came up with an audience member question, David Melton. David, if you're here, please raise your hand. What are your views on the court's ruling on police arbitration in serious cases of misconduct? And if I could start with you, Andrea, that's and actually ask both of you, because I think this does affect both departments. But I know there's a judge ruling recently, right? If you could talk to us a little bit about that. And explain your role in it and view on that.
Well, I'll just get into what our role is and how it impacts our work. So COPA has the authority to make recommendations of officer discipline when there are findings that misconduct occurred. Those recommendations have to be implemented, and even the superintendent of the Chicago Police Department does not have the authority to discipline or fire an officer unless that officer accepts that discipline without going through a process. So our most serious cases historically, things where officers have been recommended for discipline and suspension a year or more up to and including termination have always been heard before the Chicago Police Board. That is a 9-member community board that, like the commission, has open meetings. The hearings function much like an evidentiary hearing you would see in court, where both sides get to present their case with the hearing officer acting as a judge, and then the 9-member police board rules on whether or not a case has been proven sufficiently by the preponderance of the evidence. Cases of less significant penalty have historically gone through an arbitration process. Arbitration being very similar or exactly the same as arbitration in any employee situation, particularly with unionized employees. The differences between those two things are the police board is an open process. The hearings are open to the public. Members of the public can attend them. And then the disciplinary or the decisions that are made by the police board are announced at public hearings where members of the public can stand up and make public comment and respond to those findings or those decisions. The arbitration process happens behind closed doors with one arbitrator tasked with making the decision. There are attorneys on both sides presenting the case in the same way, but with far, far less transparency surrounding the process. And lastly, I'll just note, Chicago Police Board members, by ordinance, have to live in our city. They kind of are supposed to represent a wider array of the diversity we have here in Chicago, whereas our arbitrators, currently I don't believe any of them are City of Chicago residents, and almost all of them are male and white. And so those are some of the limitations, I think, to the difference in process. But under this new police contract, and then with the subsequent court ruling interpreting that, it is likely that all of our cases will ultimately end up going to arbitration.
Okay. And on your side of that, arbitration argument, does that what does that affect for your commission?
So it's probably first hot take of the day. I've always fought for transparency. That's what I've stood behind. I haven't fought for the police board, and I also stand behind that. I think it's important. She mentioned a lot of good points. Those people on the police board, there's minutes that are taken. You have a right to public comment. You have to live within the City of Chicago's limits. You have to, essentially, if you live here, you have a vested interest in this city. Those are all pluses. But I don't want to romanticize the police board as if it's been some great thing. It's been actually, for a majority of the history of the police board, it has not worked. It's been all mayoral appointed. The person who was a deputy for public safety in the last administration, the first one, was the police board member who voted in favor of the person who killed Laquan McDonald keeping. He was the only lone police board member to vote in favor. And so the police board, I think, historically had been subject to political headwinds, which put the community, officers, and everybody at a disadvantage. Our commission was created. We started working hard to fix that because now we are the appointing body and it's confirmed by the mayor and the city council. But I by no means think that the police board has been some upstanding city agency. We just saw what a police search looked like for a top cop recently. If you look a few years ago, they handed the names to the mayor, and the next day she had a decision before even interviewing anybody. So I think it's important. This judge ruled that the police officers have a right to arbitration, and he ruled that it must be transparent. I'd like to see what that looks like. Also, yes, 4 out of the 5 arbitrators currently are white males. That is a problem, but it's a problem that the city helped create. So we got to acknowledge that, that the city law department, that other entities pick these arbitrators and put them in these positions. So we can't, you know, point the finger without acknowledging the harm that our city did to actually make that the case. People in the city of Chicago looked and said it's perfectly fine for 4 out of 5 arbitrators to be white males and not see that a need for diversity there. So I'm not a person who likes to point fingers without also looking internally, and I think those are all things that need to be fixed.
So it sounds like we're on the way there, right? You feel free. Yeah. Your efforts have obviously made some significant progress, right? By you sitting here talking about this, ways to go, but is there where explain maybe a little more now about what are the responsibilities of the police board now that I feel like
they have the same responsibilities, but if the judge's ruling is implemented, and I haven't read any instructions from the courts, if the judge's ruling is implemented, police officers will have a right to choose arbitration or the police board. But he said that arbitration has to be transparent, meaning the public has a right to know.
Did they talk to you about this decision before?
No, the city, you mean the law department? No. I found out, I think, from Heather Sharon's reporting.
Do you feel like you're making progress?
I don't know. I would love to say yes. I think if you had asked me that question a few months ago, the answer would have been yes. I think we're fighting hard. Mm-hmm. I think we're trying. I think our commission is still in its infancy. I think we've done a lot of good. If you asked the question was, have we done a lot of good? Yes, absolutely. There are 300 people who came to every one of those superintendent meetings. Last night, there was a lot of angry folks and a lot of upset Chicagoans who came to police headquarters to voice their frustration directly to the superintendent. That was hard to sit through, but that didn't exist 2 years ago because you didn't have a right to go and directly address the superintendent. So progress to a certain extent, yes, but it's just hard for me to feel accomplished knowing how much work we have to do.
These are difficult conversations and difficult work. I'll give you a break. How'd you get into it?
How did I get into it?
But I want to come back to you. I've been doing this now. I've given him some time. We're going to have to switch place. But how did you get into this? Why did you get into this line of work?
So I've been involved in some form or facet of our legal system since I was 21 years old, as a court advocate, later as an attorney. I've worked in criminal court. I've done civil court. I've done now administrative. And in fact, I was an administrative law judge. The primary focus of my career has always really been, first of all, public service. I've worked for city, state, and county government, and also really trying to stand up for people that whose voice may not always be heard. Most of my experience as a Cook County State's attorney was in domestic violence and sexual assault cases, and I worked as an advocate prior to that, telling everyone I knew I was not going to go into criminal law, but then I did. And so after leaving the state's attorney's office, really felt, and I talked about the murder of Laquan McDonald. I had just left the office when all of those videos came out, and I remember watching city leaders not have explanations that made sense to me about why things hadn't been released, why decisions couldn't be made. And I remember hearing the voice of Sharon Fairley coming, you know, across to me as sort of a clarion call for change. She was then the newly appointed chief administrator for the Independent Police Review Authority that was going to become COPA. And so I said I thought I had something to contribute to that conversation. So joined COPA in the legal departments and quickly made my way into investigations and have stayed.
Great. Could you give us a little background? Why this work?
It's a necessity. It's not something that I like to do. It's not what I wanted to be growing up. It's something I ended up dedicating my life to, and not just police accountability, but public safety in general. And it was through my lived experience. I had an officer who killed a friend of mine in high school, Nico Husband, Officer Marco Perano, who I believed he was in handcuffs when he was killed. That was a very traumatic event for me. And then also 2 days after I graduated high school, I had a best friend who was murdered. And I still remember sitting in my guidance counselor's office waiting on the detectives to come interview me so me and my friends, my teammates, could tell them, and they just never showed up. Mm. So for me, that was a watershed moment for me, because it was like, I don't want to take revenge on the person that killed my friend. I want revenge on the system. Mm. And so that is why I... that's... At that moment, I dropped my other scholarships. I went to Howard. I got involved with in politics, and it's because I don't... I just wanted to be a pilot growing up. But I want the next me to just be able to go be a pilot. I don't want
them to have... It's a different kind of a plane that you're
flying. Yeah, I mean, it's a necessity. It's not something that... It's like... It's not a great role. It's not, you know, fun. It's not... I do enjoy serving, but, you know, for somebody like me who... Born and raised on the south side of Chicago, grandparents been there their whole lives, and the stuff that we've seen and had to go through, there's no way I cannot do this.
And how about your commission members? You're just getting to know so many of them, right? There's how many?
Seven of us.
Seven commission members, and then how about the community?
The district councils?
The district councils.
So I think...
I'm still learning, I'm sorry.
There's 22 police districts. There's three members elected per district council.
Okay.
So it's a 66-person body.
So this is a
Let me take that back. There's 22 police districts. Each of those has their own district council, but there's 66 of them total.
Okay. So there's a whole new part of the equation, right? There's a whole new 60-some folks that are involved in this work.
Mm-hmm.
What's driving, and I know it can't apply to every one of them, but what's driving the folks that you're meeting?
I think that there's been a need for change in our community. The thing that's unique about our commission, about the district councils, is we understand that every community is different, has different needs. You know, the needs of the first district are going to be very different than the needs of the sixth district. Those district council members are able to be the eyes and ears on the ground. And frankly, nobody thought this would work. The first thing was it'll never pass with a supermajority, because we couldn't pass it with just 26 votes. We needed 34.
And why did it need a supermajority?
Because this is essentially changing the form of government. And in order to do that by state law, you need a supermajority of the city council, meaning we only had 16 votes to lose at city council. That was the first hurdle. The second hurdle was nobody's going to run for those seats. Double the amount of people ran for those seats. Then it was, it'll never work. And we're still getting our footing. But I do think the district councils and the commission so far is proving doubt is wrong. Again, last night was a tough meeting, but you see 100 people show up to essentially voice their opinion to the superintendent directly and to our commission that did not exist 2 years ago.
And I, some might say in Illinois, I think we have the most levels or bodies of government, right? Is this an additional? Is this replacing something? Is this just additive?
No, it's actually bad history from a lot of folks. People say that all the time. I hear all the Ms. Pizzotto, you have the oversight of the oversight of the oversight. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Detroit had that a long time ago. Mm-hmm. You know, Oakland, California had that a long time ago. So we are actually just catching up on civilian oversight in our city, because we had this strongman system where the mayor controlled everything. You gave the illusion of civilian oversight, but it's really the mayor's friend who they pick to do their bidding. So we're just now catching up in our city. We've been behind. Most major cities, Joliet has a police and fire board. We're Chicago. So people, like, we're behind the times. It's not... and I know I do get it. It's new. People think it's some very convoluted system, but we are putting civilians in places of power. I am not a sworn Chicago police officer. I'm not an investigator. Our motto and what we're trying to say is that people who are the experts are the folks who live in the community, and that's who we should be accountable to.
And you had mentioned a couple different cities, and I imagine a lot of your work is looking at what goes well, what has gone well. Have you seen other cities? Have you modeled after other systems? Thank you.
So when it comes to the accountability agency conducting the investigations, we're kind of the inverse of what Anthony's talking about. And he and I have had this conversation. For the commissions and the broader oversight boards and bodies and panels, late to the game, Chicago has been. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the agency that has to investigate these claims, Chicago and COPA have far more authority than almost any of our contemporaries across the country. We lead in a couple of ways. Number one, the transparency that we talked about earlier. It's a unique and I think singular case where Chicago and COPA specifically, not only do we have the duty to put these materials out to the public, but we have direct access to those materials. So we are not asking the Chicago Police Department to please share with us their body-worn camera or their reports. We have direct access to that, and we are making the decisions about what materials are relevant under the policy as opposed to the police department itself or, to Anthony's point, City Hall. So that's one area where I think we're really different. The other would just be the nature of the powers and the depth and breadth of our jurisdiction. Most civilian oversight investigatory models don't have administrative subpoena power, don't have staff like I have. You see cities across the country where they got five people investigating their entire police department. I have a staff of 150. You know, again, the direct access to all of these files, officers don't have the choice to participate in our investigations. They're required to. That's different in a lot of other places. So there are ways in which Chicago leads and there are ways in which Chicago lags. And I think we just have to be able to be honest about those conversations from our various roles and perspectives.
Great. We do have a couple of audience questions that I'm going to fold in here. John McCarthy, a BEAT facilitator. A study has been approved by City Council to examine workforce allocation in the Chicago Police Department. Do you believe the results of that study will be open to the public? Do you believe that the public will someday have a role in police workforce allocation?
Yeah, so that's actually, even before that was passed by the City Council, I believe Alderman Matt Martin was the sponsor. We set annual goals for the superintendent, for Chief Administrator COPA, and the Police Board President. That was already in our goals to be accomplished, and there's a timeline in our goals for progress on that. So I do think this is needed. I think it would be great if our City Council would pass something that required us to do this, you know, even yearly or every 2 to 3 years. But, if I'm in this position still, I do think it will be public.
Okay. Anything on police allocation?
I'll just say we support transparency. So while that's not directly in our purview, certainly we believe the public's interest in understanding this information is critical.
That's probably the biggest issue that I hear from residents is response times. And I think that gets directly to that. So I don't think we have a choice but to be transparent. We're not starting at level zero here. Mm. We're starting at a deficit of trust. So it's becoming of city government to go and reach down and try to fix that. We can't just act like we're at ground zero. We're not. We're in a negative. So I think you have to start with transparency. That, you know, folks, myself, 40 minutes to a robbery scene. You hear folks, I hear, you know, priority one calls or officers don't show up. We got to get to the bottom of that. It has to be transparent.
Okay, excuse me as I'm reading this really for the first time. Erica Mingo from National Lewis University. In what ways are the old and institutional manifestations of racism attended to by the work of both guests today and their work? I can repeat that if you want. In what ways are the old and institutional manifestations of racism attended to by the work of both guests in today's work?
Either way, I can start. I think one thing that we just need to acknowledge and be willing to state publicly is institutional racism existing in all levels of our government, certainly including the Chicago Police Department, but not limited to. Also, I think one thing that can be a challenge for us in the individual officer misconduct investigation, sometimes not having the ability to pull back and look at the big picture about how this is interconnected, comes at the cost of an individual who lodges a complaint feeling seen and heard. So I think what we've struggled and continue to try to evolve to do at COPA is really balance both the individual facts of any given case, but also be looking at what do all these cases together represent? Why is it that you get the same complaints from the same neighborhoods, from the same people? What do we understand about that, and what can we do differently? And that's the part that I think for COPA, being in this role of misconduct investigations, understanding and recognizing that just because there may have been a constitutional basis to make a street stop or a traffic stop doesn't make it equitable or fair. It may, and being able to look at that more broadly as, and it ties into police resources, how police are policing our neighborhoods. That isn't necessarily answers that you find in individual misconduct, but what those complaints speak to is a broader experience that we have to help the department confront and change.
Yeah, I'll just talk briefly about two things that we've done thus far. One was the gang database. You know, 90%+ of folks on that database being Black and Latino people, only having about a 3 to 5% accuracy rate, to me was an extremely racist tool that now no longer exists. And the other thing is the work that we did, specifically Commissioner Loizen and Terry, around the extremism policy. Previously, it was they wanted us to have a list of organizations. But if I was the leader of an extremist organization, say the Proud Boys, I'm the leader of the Proud Boys, right? And then I come out on a list, I change my name and constitution, and now the Sad Boys, and now I'm no longer on that list. That didn't make sense. What the new policy does is create a definition of what it means to be a part of an extremist organization. So now you can look if the mission statement of the public statements of these organizations match with that definition, you can now be held accountable for being a member of these extremist organizations. So those are just two things that we've taken to address those, but we have to address racism within our city, but I think we have a long way to go.
Definitely.
Okay. Thank you for that. We have about five more minutes and three different questions, so I'm going to try to squeeze them in here. And hopefully that's it. Yes. Do you believe CPD's rank and file have actually accepted that citizens have a substantive role to play in the reduction of crime and the fear of crime?
I can't answer that. It's 10,000 people.
10,000
every. There's no way I can broadly speak to. I haven't talked to 10% of them. I don't even have a large enough sample size to make that judgment. I hope so, possibly not, but it is the truth.
I'll say we talk to every recruit that comes into the Chicago Police Department. And when you talk to recruits and engage recruits, they get it. And they understand that reality. What happens when you become part of that police culture can sometimes change. And that's not to paint every officer in the same broad brush, but to say that there is a cultural identity around the department that I think is still fairly resistant and strongly resistant to meaningful community control over all aspects of their work.
Is that a new policy that you talk with recruits? Is that something you've been doing for?
That's not a new policy, no. COPA has always, as many of the oversight entities, has always made an intentional point of being present in those classes. And for me individually, as the chief administrator, I really try to focus on being at every promotional class for officers that are becoming sergeants, lieutenants, captains, because those individuals often have much more established ideas of what my agency is or isn't. And so getting the chance to sit in front of them, and those are some spicy rooms and conversations where I get a lot of questions that are not always comfortable or pleasant, but being able to make myself available for that level of scrutiny and then deliver transparency and response is really, to me, the only path forward.
So do you think it's getting better? I mean, do you think the rank and file and the command staff are more understanding of what you're doing? That doesn't mean they're going to be more accepting, but are they more understanding and perhaps more accepting of what?
I can say that we don't leave those conversations without greater understanding being had in that room, in that moment. How that stays, given all of the public noise around our work and sort of the media's pitting of CPD versus COPA, et cetera, it's hard to say. And to Anthony's point earlier, certainly I can't speak for 10,000 officers. We have a lot more work to do to continue to try to improve the way CPD members understand the work of COPA and vice versa.
Well, maybe that's where we end in a minute with our final question from Joey Silverhorn from the RTA, which is, where are we headed? And I think if maybe we, each of you, I'll give you a couple minutes to close on that. Where are we headed? What does police oversight look like 5 to 10 years from now? well, this is a big question, but what does public safety look like 5 to 10 years from now?
Come on.
So maybe just look forward a bit. We've seen the history. We've seen how we got here. We've seen how many years it has taken to get different elements of this into place. What's next? I'm going to give you a breather.
Thanks.
And Anthony, ask you to start with an answer to what's next. Let's look out a few years from now when some of this work has really taken effect.
So looking at that through the lens of our commission, I think what we're seeing is a lot more Chicagoans actually being engaged. There's a lot more meetings around public safety now. I can't predict the future, but the one thing that I can say is, you know, through all of the bad, which I've had to experience in this city, that my parents, grandparents, friends, my union, all of us have had to experience, I still trust this city. I still believe in us. I still believe in my community. So while I can't predict it, I would say where we're headed is to a better place. And honestly, I think that I hope we never lose that sense of optimism that yes, it's okay for us to admit that things are bad. Things aren't great in our communities. It's okay to admit that we have a lot of killings and robberies and people are scared. It's okay to admit that we have a lot of folks on fringes and in different places politically and that we don't agree and we villainize one another. But this is still Chicago. And that's what I believe in. I do believe we're headed to a better place.
Thank you for that.
You know, I think I lead an agency with a very specific mission and a very specific task that we have to accomplish. And so for me, individually, a lot of my goal is really to make sure that COPA is functioning at its capacity, at the level it can. We've done a lot of work in the last 3 to 4 years to really live up to the expectations that the public has of us, that officers have of us, that now our commission and other folks have of us. We have work to continue in that space. So that's where we're focused. But what I envision, I think, is a reality where, you know, we're not defining these outcomes in moral terms. We're not deciding, you know, officers are good or bad in any individual incident or that a member of the public was right or wrong. But we're really able to make room to understand the humanity that is happening on all sides. And just to take us all the way back to this morning's video release, that is one of the most human things from start to finish that really it brings to mind just all of the complexity that I think we're tasked with trying to navigate in any one of these individual cases. And we have to do a lot better job of that as a public and certainly as governments and city leaders. So I just look forward to continuing to try to have those conversations and finding collective path forward together.
Great. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for all of your work. To both of you, I will say on behalf of City Club that we are equally committed to continuing those conversations. And they're not easy conversations, but things are getting better. They will get better. And because we're able to have you both here sharing what you're doing more broadly, I think we're stepping in that right direction. So thank you again. There is more to come. We will continue these conversations. We will welcome all of you back to City Club anytime. We have many programs coming up. Check our website. Share ideas for future programs. We don't pick sides on issues. We don't pick one issue over another. We really are trying to share this platform with all of those who are doing good things in Chicago and lifting our city up. So please share some of those ideas. We've got more programs to come, and really appreciate everybody's time here today and all the work that you're all doing.
Thank you.
Thanks again. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you.